this presentation is about how the law works in the United States. And the reason I'm recording this is that we're going to talk about a number of federal laws, federal regulations, Supreme Court decisions, executive orders, state laws, and local ordinances. And you have to have some kind of context in order to understand the significance and the powers that reside in the different branches of government and how laws are interpreted and applied. Just so you know, more generally, in every profession, you need to know something about laws and you have to be able to read laws and regulations. My first job after college was as an actuarial consultant. And as an actuarial consultant, I had to read and interpret the Internal Revenue Code, which is a big complicated set of laws and regulations. And I also had to know about, to read, understand, and interpret the, for example, Employee Retirement Income Security Act of 1974, which is about pensions and health insurance, and I needed to know about labor law and other similar branches of law. So the larger point is that regardless of your precise profession, it's almost certain that you're going to need to know something about laws, and you'll probably need to read and interpret laws and regulations that are relevant to what you're doing. So I think that this information will be of help to you regardless of precisely what you end up doing after college. So to start with, we need to remember that in the United States, under the terms of the United States Constitution, there are three branches of government that have sort of complementary and balanced responsibilities, privileges, and authorities, right? This is the doctrine of the separation of powers and the balance of powers in our government. You'll also remember that we have a federalist system of government in that the Constitution provides certain powers to the federal government, but all powers that are not explicitly reserved to the federal government remain with the states. And moreover, states have their own constitutions, which in some respects have similar provisions in that some powers are reserved to the state governments and other powers are devolved to local, county, or municipal governments. As a result, there's a complex web of different kinds of laws and regulations at different levels of government, and also different parts or implementations or interpretations of law that rely upon the different branches of government. Because, of course, I didn't say it, but I'll say it now, of course, the states also have different branches of government, right? Each state has an executive branch, a legislative branch, and a judicial branch, just as the federal government does. So there's a separation of powers, not only at the federal level, but also the state level. So this all means that reading and understanding how law actually works is a little bit complicated. Now, just allow me one disclaimer. As you know, I'm not a lawyer. I don't pretend to be a lawyer. This is all basic stuff that you maybe should have learned in an American history or a civics or a political science class. But in my experience, a lot of people don't fully understand this, or it's only theoretical until you actually have to apply it in a practical situation. As a result, I find it useful to actually review some of this stuff, because we're going to talk about how this stuff actually gets applied in practice. So there is a hierarchy of legal authorities or legal interpretation. And the highest level of legal authority in the country is the United States Constitution, right? That is effectively the highest law of the land. So as I'm sure you understand, the Supreme Court interprets the Constitution in certain cases, and all laws are subject to the Constitution in the sense that they must pass a test of constitutionality or else they're invalid. So below the Constitution are treaties, which are considered to be the highest law of the land as well. You may recall that treaties are need to be approved by the Senate, right, as well as being signed by the president. Once they're approved, then they are considered to be among the highest law of the land. This is true not only of treaties with other nation states, but what other kinds of treaties do we have? We have treaties with Indian tribes. And because of the nature of archaeology in the United States, Indian law is involved because Indians have, in many cases, a special relationship to and certain privileges and rights associated with archaeological remains. And so Indian law and Indian rights, and therefore treaties with Indian tribes, are very relevant to archaeologists in the United States. In the hierarchy of legal authorities, below the Constitution and treaties are federal laws. Bear in mind that federal laws trump state laws, and of course state laws trump local laws. However, federal laws tend to be somewhat limited in application in most cases because of our federalist system of government, which limits the powers of the federal government and reserves to the states powers that are not explicitly given to the federal government in the Constitution. Now, federal laws are often provide authority for particular federal departments in the executive branch to issue regulations for the practical implementation and interpretation of statutes or laws. So, for example, the National Historic Preservation Act establishes the National Register of Historic Places, but it also provides authority to the National Park Service, which is part of the Department of the Interior, to issue regulations that specify precisely how the National Register of Historic Places is going to function. And the National Park Service has done that. Federal law also provides mechanisms, specific mechanisms and protocols for issuing federal regulations. So, for example, when a department of the government under the authority of a particular law or statute issues a regulation, first it has to propose a draft regulation which gets published in the Federal Register, which is the official organ of communication of the federal government. And it publishes, so a draft copy gets published and is open for public comment. And so people then send in comments, and the agency of the federal government that is responsible for issuing those regulations has to consider the comments fairly and sympathetically, and ultimately then issues a final regulation, which is in turn published in the Federal Register. Once a regulation is finalized and published in the Federal Register, it comes into force. And once it's in force, it has the force of federal law because it is issued under the authority of a statute. So federal regulations are actually binding on parties. They're not just advice or some interesting thoughts or helpful guidance. Federal regulations have the force of law. And if you don't believe that, try violating the Internal Revenue Service regulations when you do your taxes next time and see if you end up in jail. In addition to regulations, federal departments and the agencies that compose them sometimes issue various kinds of guidance. Now, guidance is not the same as a regulation. Guidance is, in fact, helpful advice, but it's a little bit more than that because, you know, if a federal agency offers guidance on how to do something and you don't obey it, and then you get sued, it may be hard to defend yourself. Whereas if you do follow the federal guidance and you get sued and you go before the federal judge and say, look, I followed the guidance, that is in fact not a complete defense, but it is at least a partial defense. And so people tend to follow guidance offered by federal agencies for the implementation of laws. Now, I'm sure you're aware that federal laws get interpreted by federal courts. And of course, there's a hierarchy of courts. So there are federal district courts, and then there are courts of appeals. There are federal courts of appeals because there are also state courts of appeals, but the federal courts of appeals interpret federal law. And then, of course, the highest court of the land is the Supreme Court, which interprets federal laws as well as sometimes state laws, and also interprets the Constitution. The reason this is relevant is that, many of the laws that we're going to study and that have a practical effect on archaeological sites and the professional practice of archaeology are federal laws, and so they get interpreted by federal courts. And because of our common law system of government in the United States, the court precedents, in effect, have the force of law themselves. So if a federal court, and of course, most importantly, the Supreme Court, finds some statute or some provision of a federal law to be unconstitutional, that law or that provision of law really becomes invalid and impossible to enforce. So, or if they find that somebody has some particular responsibility under the terms of a statute, then people have to follow that decision, even though it's not enshrined in law that's been passed by the legislature or by Congress and then signed by the president. So to give you an example from preservation law, federal courts have found that Section 110 of the National Historic Preservation Act, which requires federal agencies to have a historic preservation program, federal courts have found that they've not found that invalid, but they've essentially found that it's kind of unenforceable in the sense that the federal preservation program of a federal agency is kind of whatever the agency says it is, so that you can't sue under that provision of the National Historic Preservation Act and get the agency to do anything specific. So the agency is effectively in charge of how it administers Section 110 of the Federal Preservation Act, the National Historic Preservation Act. And so, you know, there isn't any positive requirement for any particular federal agency to undertake any particular specific task. And so you can't really sue an agency under that provision and get them to do any particular thing. Now, in the hierarchy of legal authorities, below the Constitution, treaties, federal laws, federal regulations, and federal court decisions are executive orders. Now, executive orders are orders issued in the form of, a document signed by the president. And executive orders are binding, but only on the executive branch of government. So executive orders are statements about how the executive branch is going to conduct its business. And as I say, they are binding, but they're only binding on the executive branch itself. So they are expressions of policy and how federal agencies or the executive branch is going to actually implement and administer federal laws and federal responsibilities. Now, all executive orders, as far as I know, say that they do not create new law and they do not provide a cause of action for lawsuits against the federal government because they're only intended for the internal administration of the executive branch. So in theory, if a federal agency violates an executive order, in theory, they can't be sued. But in practice, I think there are lawsuits in which people allege, or companies or states or other organizations allege, that the federal government's not following its own procedures. And, you know, I don't know how successful those lawsuits are. I'm not a lawyer. But I'm pretty sure that people sue when the federal government doesn't do what it says it's going to do. Obviously, the federal government, like other governments in the United States, has a responsibility not to be arbitrary and capricious in its application of law. And so, you know, if the federal government says it's going to do something in some particular way, and then in one particular case it doesn't do it that way, I imagine the government is open to accusations that it is acting arbitrarily, capriciously, or in a discriminatory manner. And so there may be a basis for a lawsuit that way. Just so you know, there are a number of executive orders regarding historic preservation and archaeological sites. And I think that we'll talk about them briefly at some point. They are important to archaeologists and other historic preservationists who are working in the federal government. Beyond that, they have, I would say, a somewhat limited effect on most practicing archaeologists. But there are a number of archaeologists working for the federal government, either directly as employees or as contract employees or as contractors who are hired by the federal government. And in those cases, it may be significant that it may be necessary to know what these executive orders say, because they have some, albeit limited, practical effect on how the federal government actually complies with the historic preservation and antiquities laws in this country. In addition to executive orders, the executive branch, that is to say the president, issues from time to time executive memoranda. And the difference between an executive order and an executive memorandum is that an executive order really is binding on the executive branch of government, whereas an executive memorandum is more like guidance. And so they're somewhat less powerful and somewhat less significant. Now, below the level of federal law is state law. And in each state, the highest law of the state is the state constitution. And in each state, there's a constitution, and then there are state laws that are issued, that are passed normally by the legislature of the state and signed by the governor, who's the executive officer of the state. And those state laws are actually much broader in application in many cases than federal laws, because in our federalist system of government, the powers that are reserved to the federal government are relatively limited, and most power devolves to state governments. So both state constitutions and state laws are, generally speaking, much more extensive and in many cases much more detailed and, frankly, intrusive than federal laws are. So if you don't like the laws where you live, the chances are you have a beef with the state rather than the federal government. So state law is, in some respects, structured much like federal law. So there's a constitution, and then there are laws that are passed by the legislature and signed by the governor. And then, just as with federal laws, state laws may authorize the issuance of regulations that are for the detailed and practical administration of those statutes. Now, in addition to state laws, there are also, of course, local laws. And local laws are issued by counties or municipalities, or in Louisiana by parishes. And they deal, obviously, with domains of law that are not usually covered by either federal law or state law. Now, of course, just as federal law trumps state law trumps local law. However, because, again, of the sort of decentralized or devolved system of law and government in the United States, local laws are, in fact, the laws that sometimes have the greatest impact on our lives on a daily basis. So, for example, if you think about it, the federal government, as a rule, doesn't have any power over what you do on your land, right? The castle doctrine. Your home is your castle, and nobody can really tell you what to do on your own property. So, you know, if you want to take a dump in your front yard, you know, the federal government really doesn't have anything to say about that. And in most states, the state government doesn't have a lot to say about that. But guess what? Your local city government or municipal government or county government can tell you what to do on your land through, for example, zoning ordinances. So it may seem contradictory, but it's often true that your local government, which, you know, may be the, what, sort of, in some respects, least professional, least organized, and least funded part of government, is the one that has the most power to kind of tell you what to do and to affect your daily life. And that's true with archaeological sites as well. The federal government has essentially no power to regulate what you do with archaeological sites on your land. In most states, the state government has no power, or at least no desire or interest in regulating what you do with archaeological sites on your land. But your local government can. Your local government can tell you through zoning ordinance or county ordinances or what have you, that you can or cannot excavate or damage archaeological sites on your land. So, in summary, the hierarchy of legal authority goes the United States Constitution, treaties, federal laws, and federal regulations, and then there are federal court decisions which form precedents for the interpretation and application of laws through the federal court system, and then there are executive orders which are powerful but are only limited to the executive branch of the federal government. And then there are state constitutions, state laws, state regulations, and then local ordinances.